Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. As the world watches the Olympic Games in Rio, we'll begin by talking about St. Louis and the Olympics. Although the city has sent many athletes to Olympic Games over the years, it has also set Olympic standards in many ways. St. Louis was the first ever non-European Olympic venue. It was during the 1904 World's Fair year when the third Olympiad of the modern era was held here. There were other firsts, too. Joining me in studio to talk about St. Louis Olympic history is Sharon Smith, curator of civic and personal identity at the Missouri History Museum. Sharon, nice to have you back with us again.
Thanks, Don. It's good to be here.
I think a lot of people might be asking the question that I'll ask you. A little surprised that St. Louis would be chosen as the first U.S. site for the Olympics. Why was it?
Well, actually, we weren't chosen initially. We kind of took those Olympics from Chicago. They were the city that was chosen to host the 1904 Olympics, in fact, because St. Louis was looking at that World's Fair for 1903. When it looked like we were going to postpone for a year and hold the World's Fair in 1904, St. Louis then was concerned that, you know, we'd have this competing city with a competing event. So we went to the Olympic Committee and asked to have the Olympics brought to St. Louis. And after, I'm sure, some, you know, backroom arguing and so on, we actually did get the Olympics in 1904.
So we had two pretty big things going on at the same time.
We did, yes. And, you know, it was interesting that you would think, when we think about the Olympics today, how many people look at these Olympics, you know, visit and travel and go to them. Maybe not quite as highly visited in 1904. The real draw still was the World's Fair.
My impression is that they were drawn out, too. It wasn't a two-week affair, that it went on for quite some time.
Yeah, you know, when they realized that they were bringing the Olympics to St. Louis, the fair planners chose to make the physical culture side of the fair a summer-long event. So there were some official games over the course of a week or so. But many other athletic events took the guise of the Olympics. And so even some of the more minor events that weren't necessarily medal events but looked like Olympic events were considered under the guise of the Olympics. So yeah, most of the summer.
Otherwise, would we recognize the games of 1904, those of us who have been watching this past week or so?
I think most of it, yes, we would. You know, there were some things that don't occur anymore. Tug of war would have been one of them. Some of the names of some of the track and field things, there was a hop, skip, and a jump event, which is, you know, really just a running jump of some sort. And some of them would look very similar. The equipment might have changed a little bit over time, but for the most part, we could find ourselves being comfortable in.
I think the uniforms probably were a little bit different as well.
That's
those who wore uniforms.
That's right. That's right. And many people, you know, there wasn't a specific uniform for any specific country. You know, some folks showed up in their, you know, whatever they were wearing in the day and ran the marathon in their street clothes. So it depended on certainly where they were from and who they were representing. But, you know, that was very different.
Well, I was going to get to this a little bit later when you talk about where people were from. I know, by the way, the marathon was run in street clothes for the most part.
Yes.
As I remember. Let's see, the anthropology days is what I wanted to refer to. You talk about where people were from. This is something that is quite striking. What were anthropology days?
So the anthropology days were a series of probably close to a week long, I believe, that really pitted the folks who were at the fair that were, we would maybe consider them today the exhibited peoples of the fair. So the people who were there for various native displays and living amongst their own group of people in their own culture, they took those people and pitted them against the athletes that were here for the Olympics to see who was stronger or who was, you know, better as an athletic in various athletic events, I guess you could say. And it was interesting. Then the prizes were money as opposed to awards because, again, this was not an Olympic event. And, you know, it was interesting. For some of these native peoples, they had no clue what these events were. So it really was, there was just no competition here. And in some other events, they would have been better than the Olympian because if they're throwing a javelin, maybe they weren't as competitive, you know. So it was an odd setup to see who, you know, and it was an experiment to see who was the stronger or the better. And I just think it was sort of a failed attempt in some ways.
We're talking about such peoples as Aborigines, Pygmies, those who are on display at the fair itself.
Yes, yes. Up against some of the, you know, athletes of the day for whom, you know, this is something they've trained for. And most of these athletes were athletes that were coming out of athletic clubs. So it's not the same as what we would think of as our athletes today who maybe are going through very rigorous training, but still they would have been athletes nonetheless. They would have been in clubs that they would have been doing their athletic events, you know, as a regular occurrence. So to put the two together seemed odd.
Can you imagine trying to pull off something like that in today's world?
No.
No.
You know, but I think back in the day, if we set ourselves back in 1904, mm-hmm. there were a lot of experiments that the folks in, you know, whether it's the World's Fair or the Olympics, they were just trying to understand sociology and anthropology and all of those facets of society that, you know, today we would find a little more scientific manner in which to do that.
This was peculiar just to those 1904 games, I'm sure.
Yes.
Because of the fact that the World's Fair was here.
Correct.
It's also my impression, though, that the first African-American athletes were involved in the 1904 Olympics.
That's correct. We have that distinction in St. Louis then of being able to award an African-American with the first Olympic medals. So his name was George Pogue. He was from Milwaukee, and he ran several hurdle events and several track and field events where he never received a gold medal, but certainly several silver and bronze medals in that year. So it's a nice first for St. Louis.
Well, you mentioned the medals, and we had mentioned in our introduction that there were several firsts in 1904, and the awarding of medals was among them. Tell us about that.
That's correct. So before St. Louis, they would have received a gold medal, and they might have received a Loving Cup as their trophy, but there would not have been second, third prizes in the sense of medals. So in 1904, for the first time, the decision was made that they would award gold, silver, and bronze medals, and one of those lasting traditions of the Olympics that started right here.
So we can boast of the ice cream cone and the hot dog and the first medals in the first U.S. Olympics.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
They were all over the place. It wasn't just Forest Park. I think most people think that everything was contained in Forest Park, but quite to the contrary.
Yeah. So when you think about the Olympics, you know, again, a venue today in Rio, they might travel a little ways, but there still was it's a Olympic village, if you will. And back in 1904, we had Washington Hughes track and field stadium and the gymnasium,
Francis Field
today. Mm-hmm. And so that would have been the Olympic venue for any of the track and field events. If you were swimming, you would have gone to the life-saving pond, which would have been on the fairgrounds as opposed to on Wash U's campus. And then if you wanted to do rowing, you had to go to Creve Coeur. If you wanted to do the golf events, those were at Glen Echo. So you had to travel to most of these events some way or other. And that made it a little more difficult for spectators to find their way as well.
Well, one of those venues you just mentioned, was it the rowing? It is now underground beneath the golf courses, I understand it.
Oh, the Creve Coeur Lake?
No, there's something in the park that is now located in what is now the golf course, in what industry.
Yes, you're correct. So the life-saving pond, which would have been at the corner of Wydown and Skinker, was a man-made pond that now is covered over. And, you know, so you can't find that venue either. Glen Echo, of course, you can still find Creve Coeur Lake and Francis Field. But, yeah, so some of the places don't even exist. And they would have been odd venues at best when you think about a life-saving pond, which was actually used daily for the World's Fair events. So, it wasn't clean, let's just say.
I have a note here, and I should have asked this earlier. We're going back to those folks who were during the anthropology days were involved. Were those folks there who were part of the World's Fair? Were they participating of their own free will, or I know they were paid if they happened to win?
You know, I don't know that answer specifically, but my hunch is that in a lot of these. In a lot of these instances, I think they went around and just took the volunteers and tried to explain. You know, again, now we have a language barrier as well, more than likely. But to try and coerce, not coerce, but certainly
encourage.
Encourage would have been a good way, yes, to participate. And then if they dangle this monetary prize, I suspect that certainly had something to do with it. But, you know, I think that they tried to gather as many people as possible. Now, whether they got a lot of takers, it's a field of interest for me that I think is down the road for looking at that as a specific topic.
Do we have any sense of how much they were paid?
Not to my knowledge, no. Was that something that, you know, was across the board for every event? And, you know, I'm suspecting that not a lot of the, you know, the anthropology side of this event were the winners. I suspect it was the Olympians.
No doubt. That's the way things have worked for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I have in my notes here, there are a couple of stories about the Olympics written in the newspapers. I'm sure you're aware of this. One referred to the events here as a comedy of errors. And an Olympic official said the games matched the mediocrity of the city. Oh, my.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. Why the criticism?
Well, you know, I think because I think there could be a couple reasons. One is I do believe that, you know, in 1904, again, we were trying to do two things at once in the city. And, you know, the focus really always had been the World's Fair. And then there was this desire to add the Olympics. So, you know, not as many spectators, not as many people as interested. You didn't get a lot of foreign competition. This was an Olympics where America was against America. You know, it was an athletic club against athletic club as opposed to the U.S. against somebody else. So, you know, then you don't, so it's really not even a foreign contested games in a lot of places. I think we had some certain stories that we can get into about the marathon or, you know, some of the swimming events or what have you. And then, you know, just a lot of, you know, similar to today, there was cheating involved and there was doping involved in various events. And some of those stories are interesting, but you know, I just don't think that we had that we could have planned both of those events and been totally successful. And I think the World's Fair won out.
Yeah, they were big deals. I mean,
they were
major events, needless to say. I have to take a break and will in just a moment. But as you watch the Olympics today, and given all the research that you've done on the 1904 games, what strikes you? I mean, do you visually, mentally make any kind of a comparison to what you've learned and what you're seeing?
Well, I think certainly the streamline sort of way that Olympics take place today, certainly much more of a international competition is clear. And, you know, just the fact that there's so much put into getting athletes to those events, and the fact that in 1904, every athlete was on his own to get there, and I say his because they were mostly men, to get there. And it really is so much different today and so much more of a media spectacular event.
And commercial.
Yeah. Everything is so, so different, but interesting that there are roots that go back to 1904.
We are talking with Sharon Smith from the Missouri History Museum, and we're talking about the 1904 Olympics, which were held in St. Louis. And it was the first time that the United States was host to the Olympic Games. We'll continue our conversation with Sharon in just a moment. Stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Sharon Smith from the Missouri History Museum. We're talking about the 1904 World's Fair year, seen in many firsts. We've discussed some of them. We'll discuss more, but you do have an exhibit at the museum, a relatively small one, I gather, about the 1904 fair.
The fair and within that World's Fair exhibit is a little bit about the Olympics, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, you mentioned women a moment ago, and there were a few women who participated in the Olympics in 1904. Who were they and what did they do?
So women were only permitted to enter one event in the Olympics, and it was archery. And so there were six women. And, you know, it's such a small little event that you would think we would know all six of their names, and I can't tell you one of them right now. But you know, they were limited to just this one event, and yet today we look at how amazing women are in all sports, and almost sport for sport, you see men and women in these events. But in archery, it was just the only event they could do.
Well, and I think the biggest stars so far of the Olympics in Rio have been women, excluding Michael Phelps and all that
right.
he has done.
Right.
But the women gymnasts, for instance, yeah. and swimmers have been exceptional.
Yes, yes. And I see that there are, we haven't really gotten so far involved in the track and field events, but you know, you look at some of these women and they are so strong and so capable. And you think, well, you know, back in the day, even in 1904, women could, you know, they were permitted to do certain things as women. They could play tennis. You see lots of events where women are playing tennis, but just not in the Olympics. Bicycling, they could, you know, that was a female sport per se, but not in the Olympics. So archery was just that one thing that, you know, they could participate as a athlete, which is odd. And I don't know why.
Do you have any sense as to when it became more common for women participation, female participation?
I don't know. That was a question I thought of, you know, even as early as this morning when I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, that's something we need to figure out, because at some point they make their mark and they start to become more and more. And I suspect if I were to just think historically, maybe once we get into the 20s and women are sort of a little more seen in public in ways, you know, with the flappers and all of the parts of, you know, the 20s, I think we kind of get into that where women are more able to do things.
Of course, that's when they got the right to vote. So I
that's
guess
right.
they were advancing in our society.
Maybe they just voted themselves into the Olympics. I don't, you know, that could be.
You mentioned that the participation in the Olympics was primarily Americans. That there were not so many from other countries, which I guess would explain the fact that the United States won 239 medals, and the others only won maybe a dozen or so.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's easy to cheer for the United States whenever they're the only ones that are participating. But it was again because athletes had to make their own way to the venue. So if you're a foreign athlete, it's hard. You know, you have to pay your own way. You have to figure out how to get there. You have to, you know, have your own equipment and what have you. So it was really an event between athletic clubs. And even foreign, you know, those folks showed up then sort of representing their own country as opposed to the United States with these various clubs. But it really became more of a club against club. And the interesting thing is that some of the most international of the events were the ones that made it a little more interesting as a sport too, you would think. You know, when you think about the marathon or some of those where you actually have foreign competition involved.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the marathon.
Yeah.
because there are a couple of pretty interesting stories with regard to it. Tell us very generally about the marathon, then we'll talk about some of the cheating though.
That's
cheating
right.
that went on.
Well, you know, it was your typical marathon story in that it's a, you know, roughly a 26-mile run. You know, in this case, in 1904, it's over many of the roads of St. Louis that were dusty and hilly. We're talking St. Louis in the summer, so it's 90 degrees and humid. And you put these guys out there to run this race. And interestingly, because they're the roads that the cars are using, they sent horses in front to sort of make sure that the roads were passable and that people had gotten out of the way and the few vehicles that were around. And so now you've got dust stirring up and you've got these guys that are going to run right behind it. Again, not very thought out. I just feel like, you know, we could have done this better. But, you know, I'm thinking in my own 21st century mind. So that was the setting, you know, 90 degrees, humid afternoon, and dusty, hilly roads of St. Louis.
Well, it encouraged at least one runner that I can think of not to make the run at all, or at least not make most of it.
That's right. So then what you get is, and the other really interesting thing is, you know, normally you think about, well, you hydrate. So we gave the runners one chance to hydrate about a third of the way into the race, and then no water afterwards. And that was another one of these moments where they thought, let's do an experiment and see how the body can handle little bits of water, lots of dust and humidity and heat, and how, what's the toll for people for that? And so, you know, you get all of these factors and people are just falling off the wayside very quickly.
I mean, they were guinea pigs.
Yeah. Yeah, they really were. It literally was this horribly bad experiment on the human body. And, you know, you have 31 competitors start the race and 14 end it. And in the middle, a lot of them are falling away, including a guy by the name of Fred Lors, who falls down and is seemingly out of the race. One of the follow trucks and behind the runners and in between the runners picks him up, and he rides along the race course because they keep running or they keep riding along this race course. And after a point, he starts to feel better. He's kind of revived. Of course he would be. And he decides he's going to get off and run the rest of the way. They say, you can't do that. And he says, well, no, I'm just going to run the race anyway. And so he gets off and runs into the stadium to the cheers of people who think that this man has finished the race and he's the first person to do so. And he kind of keeps the charade up for a while until he's about to be awarded this medal. And then he's like, oh, no, this is a joke. I kind of rode part of the way through. And in the meantime, the guy who's going to eventually win the race is like barely able to stand up. And he's still, you know, making his way through this terrain. And he's been, you know, given all sorts of horrible things like strychnine and egg whites and brandy, of all things, to kind of keep his composure. I also read that they would give them warm water baths to keep them going instead of cold, which I guess would have shocked the system. So Thomas Hicks is the one who actually makes the run and wins it. But you know, we had some cheating and some doping.
But at least he turned himself in. Lors, was that his name?
He did.
He turned. Yeah. Where did that race wind up? Did it wind up in the park?
It wound up. So it started and ended actually in Francis Stadium. So in Wash U Stadium, they went around the stadium track several times and went out what we now know as Forsyth. And then they went through Clayton a little bit and out Brentwood and down Manchester and all the way out to Ballas, came back down around then into the stadium again, finally. So they made this huge loop around the county.
Francis Field, named after, I've forgotten the first name, but wasn't he the chairman of the games?
He was the president. So it's David R. Francis, who was the president of the World's Fair and, you know, mayor. You know, he had held so many positions, including ambassador to Russia later. And so he was, so they named it for him. So he was also the chairman of the games in the sense that he was the president of the fair.
Any other cheating that went on during the course of the games?
You know, that's really the worst of it. I mean, you can look at probably several other events and find little bits here and there. The thing that is more interesting has to do with the swimming events and the fact that some of the swimming events would have taken place in that life-saving pool that was probably at best dirty water. I mean, it's a pool, so it's not a moving, and it's not chlorined. It's certainly a place that you would have had a boat every day in with the Coast Guard giving these life-saving demonstrations. So not the best of conditions. So you wonder how the swimmers dealt with that. And those are certainly things that we think about when we think about Rio today. That's certainly a connection that I was making as I was hearing about the
green diving pool.
That's right. The green. Oh, and, you know, and I kept thinking, don't touch that water. And yet, you know, we had that same problem here. We also think that in those life-saving pools, there could have been the possibility that there might have been some livestock being cleaned in there as well. That's a legend. I don't know how true it is, but I've heard that story.
Anything else that comes to mind with regard to stories that people should know about?
You know, I think that those are some of the best. But what we can really feel good about is that we have those firsts, the medals, you know, and George Pogue is a great story. So I think we can't hang our heads too low. The 1904 Olympics, we were the first U.S. state and city to ever host an Olympic Games. And that's certainly a distinction for us.
Were there any names that well-known names that came out of those games that went on maybe to do other things that would, aside from Francis, for instance? Or
sure,
Pope?
Sure. You know, the name that pops into my mind, and there are many athletes that you could probably go back and maybe people, if they were real athletic followers or Olympic followers, would name differently from me. But I come up with the name Dwight Davis, who was the tennis star at the U.S. 1904 Olympics, but went on to, you know, do a lot for the city. Of course, we have Dwight Davis tennis courts in Forest Park. Sure. But he went on to be a commissioner and parks commissioner and really did a lot for the city of St. Louis. So, you know, here's a guy, went, you know, did his Olympic thing and then went on to greatness in other ways in St. Louis. So that's a name that comes to mind.
Wasn't there a Davis Cup? And maybe perhaps
yes.
there still is, but named after Dwight
yes,
Davis.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's the cup, yeah.
Anything else we should mention?
I think that's good. I think that's a good start.
Is there a resource for learning more about this history? I mean, you mentioned the internet, of course, where everybody goes, but are there any books that you're aware of that...
You know, there are several good resources at the Library and Research Center that we have at as part of the Missouri Historical Society there on Skinker. And what is really nice is that there's a whole array of photos. So you can go and you can look at the, there's some archival materials about Spalding and sort of look at every one of those Olympic events and who won first, you know, second, third place, all of the athletic events. And that's all there at the History Museum's Research Center.
And this is a great time to do that, given the
Absolutely.
Fact that Rio is they're doing so well down there, apparently.
It's great to
watch. Thank you, Sharon Smith, so much for being with us and telling us about our own Olympic history. It's been fascinating.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you.